From the heart of our nation's capital, this is Washington Watch Weekend Edition. Now, here's your host, David Salkeld.
This week on the Weekend Edition of Washington Watch, senators meet with Israeli Prime Minister. We have the latest from Congress, and the Supreme Court takes up censorship. Greetings, fellow patriots. I am David Salkeld, and I'm a constitutional conservative, Christian husband, and Reagan Republican. Historically, the support of Israel has been a broadly bipartisan issue, but in the last few years, liberals have been abandoning our most important ally in the Middle East. Recently, Senator James Lankford was among a group of Republicans that met with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu virtually, and he joined FRC President Tony Perkins on Wednesday to talk about it. Here's Tony Perkins.
Senator Lankford, welcome back to Washington Watch. Great to see you.
Tony, always great to see you.
You know, we took one of the first congressional tours over into what's called the West Bank in Samaria, Judea, probably about, 10, 12 years ago. We were on that tour. Things have changed a lot. It used to be a bipartisan issue, not so much anymore.
Yeah, it's painful. I think about when I first came into Congress, I used to tell people there weren't many bipartisan issues, but Israel was one of them. And now suddenly this has become very partisan in many ways. And I guess it really hasn't been suddenly. It's been transitioning over several years. But I'm hearing more and more rhetoric that is more pro-Palestinian than it is pro-Israel, forgetting that Israel was the one who was ruthlessly attacked in a terrorist attack. They weren't trying to provoke anything. They were just trying to exist.
What can you share with us about your conversation with the prime minister today?
Yeah, we had about a 45-minute dialogue with him. He walked through some of the military operations, what's happening in their government, and the structure, how they're holding up, quite frankly, under the stress of being under a war suddenly since October the 7th of last year. He did talk about some of the conversation about Rafah and about Hamas, because there is this whole push currently from the administration to say, don't go into Rafah and take out Hamas there. There are multiple units that are organized terrorist groups that are hiding out in Rafah. And the prime minister was very clear to be able to say this would be like World War II, to say take out the Nazis, except don't go to Berlin. Leave Berlin alone. You can't actually go into that area and take out those Nazis. His challenge is I've got Hamas as a organized terrorist organization that they have repetitively, even recently, said when this is over, we're going to go back and do another October the 7th. We will do it as many times as we possibly can. He can't do that without actually going into where they're hiding under civilians. So they've also been very clear. They're doing everything they can to protect the lives of civilians. And when you often hear the numbers from Hamas saying that there were 30,000 people that have died in this, they conveniently leave out that about 14,000 or 15,000 of those are Hamas fighters. So that ends up with a one-to-one ratio. While every single life is valuable, every life is valuable, Israel is being very aggressive to be able to do what they can to be able to protect the lives of civilians. But this is a war that Hamas started, and they continue to hide hostages and their fighters among civilians.
When I was in Israel last week and met with the prime minister, and he shared, actually using the same illustration, he also said that, look, we can't fight to a draw. We have to win.
Right.
We can't just come to a truce and say, hey, let's go about our business, because as you just pointed out, he's made very clear Hamas will be back.
Yeah, they will. They have threatened to be back, and they mean to do it. So this is not just an idle threat for them. Their intention is to be able to come back and not only kill more Israelis, civilians, but they intend to build more rockets and just shoot them at Tel Aviv and everywhere they can haphazardly.
Did he also express the concern, not only do we have Hamas, which is, quite frankly, not the greatest of the threats, you have Hezbollah and even, Iran, who it's the puppet master, but they could step up their actions against Israel to a greater level.
Yeah, he talked about the three H's that are out there, Hamas, Hezbollah, and the Houthis that are in Yemen. And people lose track of the fact that in Yemen, the Houthis right now are still launching rockets at Israel. Some of them have actually impacted in Israel all the way from Yemen, that they're launching rockets towards civilians there. Hezbollah continues to be able to shoot rockets into northern Israel, where you've got 100,000 Israelis who have had to flee from their homes in northern Israel because Hezbollah continues to be able to threaten them and to be able to launch rockets at them. So while they talk about the people displaced in Gaza, and that's all human life is valuable, and that's tragic for there what's happening in that war that Hamas started there, people just conveniently leave out 100,000 people in northern Israel that are also having to live as refugees away from their homes because of Hezbollah attacks.
So why only the demands of Israel to lay down their weapons to pursue a truce when they are not the aggressors in this war, as you pointed out, and he shared this with us, surgically trying to take out Hamas, being very careful to avoid civilian casualties. But they're not letting the refugees. Egypt will not let them go across the border into their country. I would think, Senator Lankford, that with the strong ties we have with Egypt, given the amount of foreign aid we give them, we could lean on them if we wanted to allow passage through that country.
Well, I would say the Egyptians have been very, very clear that they don't want Hamas in their country either. They don't want the Palestinian refugees in their country either. They have a fence on their border with Gaza, just like Israel has a fence on their border with Gaza to be able to make sure those individuals are not flooding over the border into Egypt. So while everyone seems to attack Israel in this process and to say that they're isolating these Palestinians in Gaza, the Egyptians are in the same boat to say, we don't want that here. And even what we've seen from the leader of the Senate, for him to be able to step out and to be able to say that is Leader Schumer, I should be clear, for him to step out and call for elections and a transition of Netanyahu, he's not called for new change in leadership in Hamas or change in leadership in Hezbollah or change in leadership in Venezuela or in Iran. It's a change in leadership in Israel. And we need to be very clear that Israel has elected the leader of Netanyahu, and he is leading in the time of war, and we need to stand with our ally during a time of war.
Absolutely, 100%. Senator, I know you got to go. I want to thank you for joining us. Always great to catch up with you.
It's good to see you again, Tony. Thanks for holding this up.
All right. Senator James Lankford of Oklahoma. You know, I was talking with someone about this the other day. What if Republicans came out, because the Democrats are wanting, you know, more funding for Ukraine, and said, you know what, we have questions about the leadership of Ukraine. And therefore, we think the Ukrainian people should have an election and replaced Zelensky as the president. Well, I mean, they would go crazy. Oh, you're undermining the country in the middle of a war. Well, that's exactly what Chuck Schumer did to the Israelis by calling for them to dissolve their government and have elections. I don't want to sound like a broken record, but this is important. I've shared this before. In fact, I shared it with the prime minister when I met with him last week. I believe America's future is intertwined with that of Israel. You say, what do you mean? Not only are they a strategic ally for us, in fact, they provide great stability in the Middle East. They are a stabilizing force. They do a lot of work in keeping the Middle East stabilized. But beyond that, beyond being a strategic military political ally, they are spiritually very significant to us as a nation. And I speak as a Bible-believing Christian here, where the scripture says in Genesis chapter 12, those who bless you will be blessed, those who curse you will be cursed. Now, you say, well, you know, that's Old Testament scripture. Well, it's also history. Look at those countries that have pursued this very small percentage of the population, about 0.05% of the population, but yet they seem to be in the crosshairs of so many people, so many nations. I think every generation has to answer the question as to how they will treat the Jewish people, whether they'll be silent at their persecution or participate in the persecution. Neither one turns out well. I believe our future is intertwined with that of Israel, because as a nation, America for the last 60 years has really been walking away, has steadily walked away from the word and the ways of God. And last week, I was standing on the Mount of Blessing in Israel and Samaria, areas that the United States, the Biden administration, wants to give away in the two-state solution. And you know, the blessing came when we walk in the ways of God according to the word of God. We're not doing that in America. We're not. But I believe that God has preserved this nation because we have stood with Israel. We have been really a protector, a provider. We've helped Israel. And God has blessed us, I believe, because of that. When we walk away from that, America's future does not look promising. And so I believe it is extremely important that we are praying for and standing with Israel. Doesn't mean we agree with everything that they do. It doesn't mean that we can't encourage them to do it better. But we need to stand with them and not turn our back and walk away from them. And I want to encourage you and join me in praying for Israel. Last week I was there praying in different parts of the country. We're going to continue that effort. If you'd like to join us in standing with Israel, text Israel to 67742. That's Israel to 67742. Okay, after the break, is DEI a prescription for bad health care? We're going to talk with Congressman Greg Murphy after the break, so don't go away. More Washington Watch straight ahead on this Wednesday afternoon.
For 40 years, Family Research Council has been in Washington, D.C., championing faith, family, and freedom in public policy and the culture from a biblical worldview. But we need your help to keep going. With your support, we can continue to equip believers to stand firm in our culture and defend biblical truth in the halls of government. Will you consider partnering with us today? To give, text the word GIVE to 67742.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. The website is tonyperkins.com. All right, a recent rash of airline safety incidents has many pointing to the FAA and the airline industry's obsession with DEI rather than safety as a major contributing factor. Well, about 36 members of Congress are trying to get ahead of the downward DEI curve as it pertains to healthcare by introducing legislation to stop the spread of the DEI virus in America's medical schools. Joining me now to discuss this and more, Congressman Greg Murphy, author of the bill. Dr. Murphy serves on three House committees, including the Ways and Means Committee, which is overseeing a lot of activity right now in Congress. He's been in several hearings today, and I appreciate him stepping out to talk with us. He represents the 3rd Congressional District of North Carolina. Dr. Murphy, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony. Hope you're doing well. Thanks to you for having me.
Absolutely. So let's talk about DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion, and your concerns about how that is infecting America's medical schools.
Yeah, you know, Tony, I think diversity can be a very strengthening thing. People learn from one another of experiences that perhaps they don't have. But the thing that we can't do in medical schools is lower our standards of merit, lower our standards of excellence. Why? You know, as I said yesterday, this is not art school. This is not English school, not history school. This is medical school. This is where people's lives are at risk. I think really the relationship that's strongest is the maternal bond, but physician-patient is right up there in the trust and the abidement in both of those relationships. And the fact now that our medical schools are making their students sign DEI pledges and they're pushing out activists, not advocates, is very, very troubling. And we're seeing this already in the decrease in quality of some of our students. And the fact that they're burned out 5 years after their residency rather than, you know, 25 years. And I think it's time to put a shot across the bow. This cannot happen. We cannot be taken over in a world of objective science by liberal arts progressive ideas.
I mean, it has real-life consequences, and they can be deadly. So let's talk today about today's Ways and Means Committee hearing with Secretary Javier Becerra. As Ways and Means Committee Chair Jason Smith noted in his opening statement today, and I quote, words like diversity, discrimination, racial justice, and gender all appear in the administration's budget far more than the border. Fentanyl, the number one killer of Americans ages 18 to 45, is only mentioned once in a footnote.
Yeah.
Your thoughts?
Equity was mentioned 77 times, and fentanyl was mentioned once. This is the whole, you know, I actually said this just a few minutes ago to Secretary Becerra, is this, it's the tone deafness of this administration, absolute tone deaf. They've opened up our border to be invaded, you know, in North Carolina up in Gates County 2 weeks ago, an illegal immigrant was shooting people and he was found to be a terrorist on the terrorist watch list, found with guns, he was found the Quran, he was found with Arabic military information. And, you know, what are they doing? They're absolutely contributing to the downfall, the spiraling of this great nation. And, you know, Becerra just, you know, smiles with his arrogant smile, and it's just tone deafness, Tony. It's absolutely tone deaf to the problems that face this nation.
You know, Dr. Murphy, I have to ask this question because I know this is what's on a lot of people's minds. I hear it all the time. Why? Well, how can they be so blind to the impact that the policies that they're pushing have upon this nation? Is it intentional, or are they that? I don't want to say. They got to see it. They cannot ignore the consequences.
I'll say incompetent. I'll say it, Tony. I'll say it. They're incompetent. And the other thing is, you know, I'm not one. Maybe it's my surgical attitude. I demand competence. I demand excellence.
Yeah.
Patience.
Well, if you were my doctor, I would want that. That's what I want out of my doctor. That's what I want out. Actually, that's what I want out of every place I go. I want the best. I want the opportunity to have the best. I don't want to lecture on, you know, the various aspects of society, which is what's happening in our medical schools today.
Well, it's we're lowering the bar of excellence. You know, look, I want a diverse class, but I'm not willing for us to sacrifice what the merit bar is basically have a nice, better pie puzzle.
But can't we have both?
I think those.
Can't we have both?
Yeah, we can have both. We can have both. But absolutely, I think it would be great to have both. But we can't let people. I remember. I won't give anecdotes, but. You know, gosh, you know, think if you're going to have heart surgery the next day, somebody's going to be splitting your chest open, your life is in their hands. Who do you want doing that? Who do you want doing that? Do you want somebody who may be mean, but he's the best in the world? Or do you want somebody who got in because of identity politics?
Yeah, I want the best.
Who do you want as a
patient? Want the best. You know,
and, you know, I don't understand it. Neil, we go back to the border. Tony, the only thing I can think of is they want to overrun some states. Illegals now are counted in the numbers for members of Congress, the representative numbers, to overrun states, to flood them up to get more Democratic members of Congress. Certain states want their illegal folks to vote in elections.
Yeah.
My God, what are we becoming as a country?
You know, I want to go back very quickly, Congressman, before we run out of time. A biblical parallel to what you're talking about, professionalism, having the best. You know, Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, when he went to him to talk about the leaders, he said, able men who fear God. And that's even what I look for in elected leaders. I want Christians, but I want able Christians. I want men and women who know what they're doing. Character matters, but so does competence.
Absolutely. And, you know, Tony, if we let folks in just merely because of the amount of melanin in their skin or what their identity politics is, it pollutes those who have the same, you know, whatever skin color or identity politics they have who are excellent.
Right.
And we're lowering the bar. And, you know, Ben Carson, I've had several discussions with him about
great
this.
Guy.
He absolutely agrees.
Yeah.
Absolutely agrees.
We can have both. We can have the diversity, and we can have excellence. I appreciate you pursuing that and keeping those issues at the forefront, even at great political risk, because some will take and distort it. Congressman Murphy, thanks so much for joining us today. Great to talk with you.
All right. Thank you so much. God bless.
You know, it's so true. I mean, in everything, we should pursue able-bodied, competent individuals. And all the other stuff is important. Character, all that's greatly important. It's tremendously important. But they got to know what they're doing. All right, don't go away. More Washington Watch on the other side of the break.
Most of us have wrestled with deep questions about the meaning of life at one time or another. Thankfully, Family Research Council's Center for Biblical Worldview's latest publication, titled An Introduction to Worldview, provides the answers. With this new resource, we invite you, your family, and your church to evaluate what makes up a worldview and to see how a biblical worldview provides the most satisfying answers to life's biggest questions. To read the full publication, visit frc.org/worldview. Again, that's frc.org/worldview.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Good to have you with us on this Tuesday. The website, TonyPerkins.com. Be sure and check it out. Lots of resources there for you. Well, yesterday we had on the program Missouri's Attorney General Andrew Bailey to talk about the oral arguments at the Supreme Court over the challenge to the Biden administration's social media censorship efforts. Well, the other leader in that challenge was Louisiana's then Attorney General Jeff Landry, who last fall was elected to serve as the state's 57th governor. He's also my governor. And he's here with me now in studio to give his take on yesterday's arguments and more. Governor Landry, welcome to Washington Watch.
Well, Tony, great to see you. Haven't seen you since the inauguration.
That's right. That's right.
I got some great pictures of you, too, by the way, that I owe you.
Well, good. I'm looking forward to it. I know you've been busy. I've been busy. But you came here to D.C. to be in the court yesterday to hear the oral arguments in this case that you and the Attorney General of Missouri pursued. Your thoughts?
Yeah, look, both Sharon and I went to the court. Certainly, I wanted to go and support our new Attorney General, Liz Murrow, who I think is going to do a fantastic job in Louisiana on a case that you write that we started, both myself and then Attorney General Eric Schmidt, who's now a U.S. Senator, where we had believed, like many other Americans, like probably thousands or tens of thousands of Americans, if not millions, that during the pandemic and during the election cycle, their voices on their social media pages were being silenced. And that we believed that the government was involved in doing that as well. And so we filed this lawsuit under the presumption that the government cannot entice or coerce or force a private actor to do that which they cannot do, such as violate a citizen's First Amendment. And, you know, a lot of people thought this case would go nowhere. Judge Doty took the case and did a great job, you know, gave us some room for discovery. We found out all kinds of things, right? We found out that, in fact, the government knew that possibly the virus, the COVID-19 virus, came out of a lab in Wuhan. We found out that the FBI knew that they had the Hunter Biden laptop, and the New York Post article was not, in fact, Russian propaganda.
So the misinformation was actually coming from the government.
Correct. Correct. That's correct. We just found out countless things. And you know, Judge Doty in the district court in Louisiana enjoined the government from continuing down this path. The Fifth Circuit took the case up. They agreed with him in part, narrowed the injunction a bit. And then the Supreme Court stayed that injunction and took the case up, and we heard it yesterday. The troubling part about yesterday's hearing, and of course I didn't get an opportunity to hear you and General Bailey's comments or his position, but what was troubling was how many of the justices who I thought could have understood and grasped the First Amendment and the government coercing social media to censor Americans, their questioning just didn't seem in line with that.
So, Governor Landy, I'm going to actually play a clip of Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson, who I think reveals the left's disregard for the First Amendment. Play clip number three.
Some might say that the government actually has a duty to take steps to protect the citizens of this country. And you seem to be suggesting that that duty cannot manifest itself in the government encouraging or even pressuring platforms to take down harmful information.
So if I understand what she's saying, the government has a right to silence you so they can protect you.
Well, let me tell you, sitting next to me was Congressman Jim Jordan and Dan Bishop. And when she made that comment, I thought Jim was going to get up and walk out. Because you're right, it was shocking. I don't know where she reads into either the Constitution or in the Bill of Rights where the federal government has a duty to infringe upon any American's civil rights or Bill of Rights, anything inside the Bill of Rights.
It's there for a reason.
Well, exactly. It's there to protect us from the government. Doing exactly that. And you know, she continued to harp on, well, you know, what if there's a compelling interest? But she seemed to gloss over the fact that before you can ask the question as to whether the government has a compelling interest to infringe upon your constitutional rights, you first must find that the government violated your constitutional rights, right? That's the first question. But she seemed to say that, listen, the government should have carte blanche to be able to infringe upon your constitutional right if the government feels
right. That they compel and the facts in this case, as we talked about earlier, show that the government was wrong. They were the ones putting out disinformation.
Exactly. And the fact that the justices didn't, or it seemed to be maybe that some of the justices who we thought were more favored towards supporting the First Amendment couldn't grasp that was a bit troubling. But look, I would hope that the line of questioning was simply to clear up some things, and maybe they did understand it. We will see. But I can tell you this, Tony. It is the most important First Amendment case in the last 100 years. There is no doubt that whatever the court does in this case is going to have an impact on American citizens and the relationship of the First Amendment to them.
So oftentimes when the court will ask these questions, it goes a different direction. So you can't always read into that. But might there be legislation that could come forth with all of the information that you've gathered through the discovery on this process?
Yeah, I mean, look, Congress could absolutely step in. I mean, look, it showed – I've been saying all along that Section 230 is problematic, okay?
That's the section that gives the social media platforms immunity from being sued by private actors for whatever reason.
Correct. In my opinion, at this point in time
– that's a special status, by the way. That's a special status.
Right, one which this broadcast does not enjoy. Right? One which TV broadcasts, radio, and
so don't say anything. I'll get sued.
Right. That's why I'm here. I'm your lawyer, too, right? But not anymore. I'm the governor. I can't give you a lawyer. But look, you're exactly right. That's why I've been advocating for the fact that what should happen is those platforms should be dropped into the same regulatory bracket as.
Absolutely.
As broadcasts.
Absolutely.
I mean, why is it that a little bitty radio station in, Monroe, Louisiana, has to watch exactly what they put on or not, and the government can't call. And then the social medias, they just have free reign?
Initially, it was to get them started, to help them, but now they're the giants. They don't need that special protection anymore.
I agree.
All right, Governor, we're out of time. I'll see you back in Baton Rouge.
All right, sure. Thank you for giving me some of your time, and thank you to all your listeners out there as well.
Always great to see you.
Take care.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. I'm David Salkeld, thanking you for being with us, and look forward to having you back here again next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
Washington Watch Weekend Edition is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com.